Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, the Playmakers are at it again. They're giving us a double dose of two wonderful plays. One, a relatively new Sondheim musical. Maybe Joe Hodge, I shouldn't say it's new. It's been around for a while, Into the Woods. But it's new in comparison to the other production that's running concurrently, Midsummer Night's Dream, by a guy named Joe Hodge, who wrote that play.
Yes, William Shakespeare.
Well, you've brought, as the producing artistic director of the Playmakers Company, you've brought two of your stars, and I would say wonderfully attractive ones, and one who has a Chapel Hill connection. Can you introduce them?
That's true, and both spectacularly talented. There is Lisa Birnbaum, who is playing Titania and Hippolyta in A Midsummer Night's Dream, and Lisa Brescia, who played Sally Bowles for us last year in Cabaret, who is joining us as the witch in Into the Woods.
Wonderful. Joe, people wonder, and so tell us about these two plays and why they are matched up, how it happened that they got to be matched up.
So last year for our rotating wrap, every year at Playmakers, we take two of our main stage plays, open them on the same day, and then run them in rotating rep with one another on alternate nights. And last year we took Shakespeare's The Tempest and Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses, a classic play and a contemporary play. Both of them plays that take water as their central metaphor and their central theme, and put those plays in conversation with one another around a 15-ton pool of water in the Paul Green Theater. So based on the success of that pairing and how our community responded to it, it didn't take us long to think of, well, what's another pairing that might be interesting in that way? So once again, we've taken a Shakespeare play, in this case, A Midsummer Night's Dream, and Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine's Into the Woods, both plays that take the forest as their central metaphor, and put these two plays in conversation in the Paul Green Theater. So I'm directing the Into the Woods, and a fantastic director called Shauna Cooper is directing A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Well, tell us first about Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. You're not directing that play, but you're the one who decided it belonged as the Shakespeare link for your joint production.
Yeah. So Midsummer is perhaps the theater's first fairy tale. It has Oberon and Titania, who are our king and queen of the fairies. The beginning of the play finds them at war with one another. Everything is out of joint. Lisa can speak further. Lisa Birnbaum can speak further about all of this, of course. And the lovers who are in Athens, the four lovers, and they are wrestling with parents, wrestling with the rules and the dictates of the Athenian government, and they flee to the woods. And both of the plays, Midsummer and Into the Woods, the forest is where we get lost in order to find ourselves. So there's coming of age, there's loss of innocence, there's sexual awakening, and this happens across both plays in fantastically interesting ways.
Why is the Midsummer Night play called Dream?
Oh, Lisa should answer that question.
Well, tell her. Well, Lisa, welcome, and welcome back to Chapel. Welcome back to Chapel Hill. You've got friends and family here, and so it's a wonderful treat to have you back.
It's marvelous. It's a dream come true. I think that what makes Midsummer a dream, as opposed to just going into the woods and finding oneself, is that when you go into the woods, magic begins to happen as if you were in a dream or perhaps even a nightmare. I mean, I don't know about your dreams, but sometimes they're a little bit of both. And I think that in our case, once the Athenians go into the woods, the fairies create this world for everyone that is just not quite right. It's a little topsy-turvy. Everything is going a little wrong, but what they learn from everything going a little wrong will ultimately inform their futures.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, Joe, tell us a little bit about the second play.
So, Into the Woods.
The second production.
Yeah, the second production is Into the Woods, which takes as its launching place Grimm's fairy tales. We see Jack of Jack and the Beanstalk fame and the Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella. And in this musical, these stories are interlinked. And so it takes the archetypal ideas of fairy tales and how they show up pan-culturally, and our desire and need for these stories and these narratives, and explores this, again, very much the same, a lot of the same ground that Midsummer covers in terms of how the woods intersect. There is the stability of the known life, the known relationship at home, and one has to adventure, called on quests. If you think of Joseph Campbell or Bettelheim or Carl Jung on myth or fairy tale, Sondheim and Lapine have done their homework. The play is resonant with those ideas. And the a piece of research that jumped out at me most was by a guy called Terry Pratchett, who suggested that, you know, people say that these stories show up pan-culturally, these fairy tales show up because of people's need to have these stories, a human need for the stories. And Pratchett posits that it's actually the other way around, that the stories have a life of their own, and they insist on being told, and you can think of them almost virally or parasitically, that they show up because of their need to be told.
So the shows themselves, or the stories themselves, have life rather than our genetic, something that we're carrying around in our experience, bringing similar or the same story to us,
so
kind of rising up
Terry,
in it.
So posits Terry Pratchett.
Well, what do you
really
think?
I'm excited about that.
You like to talk about the idea, but you don't really believe that.
I like the idea enough to have framed the production around it. So the production it lives in a kind of library where all the stories of the world have come in, and this story springs off a shelf and into our narrator's hands and insists on it being told. And so, once upon a time, and off we go. And when the characters don't like where the story is going, and into the woods, the characters throw the narrator out of the play. So the story, indeed, as Sondheim and Lapine write it, has a life of its own, separate from the teller, which is thrilling to me.
Is it one fairy tale or a whole multiple jumble of fairy tales?
It's a jumble of a jumble isn't the right word. I think it's a carefully and intricately interwoven of these multiple fairy tales. And Sondheim and Lapine create a fairy tale of the baker and the baker's wife who long to have a baby, and all of the narratives sort of intersect through their experience.
Well, how you brought another wonderful actor to talk about the play. What introduce us one more time?
So Lisa Brescia, who is playing the witch in Into the Woods, who's
maybe I should wait on this, but Lisa, you were here last year.
I was
in a wonderful production of Cabaret.
Yes,
I mean a little bit different. I mean it was very fast moving and characters who were not modern but were close enough so that we could identify a little bit with them.
Yes.
And now you're doing something. Why did you want to come back?
Well,
after working with these slave drivers
these
who make
clowns,
you work really.
No, I've told Joe Hodge that I, you know, if I only had one director, if I had to choose one director for the rest of my career, I would choose him. I had such a good time with Cabaret. I've been very impressed with playmakers from the get. The process, the rehearsal process, the design elements, the caliber of the talent, the how of how we put the play together, not just the product itself. I've loved my time here. I was very eager to come back, so I was very enthusiastically, you know, able to say yes to returning. Sally, of course, is supremely concerned with sex appeal. It's her currency and part of her currency. She thinks her talent is also part of her currency, no matter what everyone else thinks. And this character I am now playing, the witch, she was once a young and beautiful woman, and it was taken from her through a curse. And actually through a punishment, and then therefore she...
Do we get to see that work out, or we just find the witch as a... Or it's already been done to her?
At the top of the show, she has been living as an old crone for quite some time. And it's the bane of her existence.
Right?
And the costume is spectacular. It's completely transformative. And couldn't be further from Sally Bowles.
But does the witch turn out to be even nicer and have qualities that are she an evil witch?
Well, I think she is definitely filled with anger and resentment and bitterness, and she is a punishing woman. However, I think her motives aren't necessarily all just coming from a stone-cold heart. She has a daughter, and that's where the fairy tale Rapunzel comes in. The baby that she, you know, often in fairy tales, there are, they bargain for infants. She bargained for this baby, and she has raised Rapunzel, and now Rapunzel, being a young woman, the witch protects her from the evil of the world and protects her chastity as well by locking her up in this tower with no stairs and no doors, and the only access is by climbing her hair. And she's her well-kept secret. But from the witch's point of view, she's the consummate overprotective parent. She thinks this is good parenting, truly. And they've got a good thing going. In the witch's eyes, they have this great love relationship. It's a love affair between this mother and this daughter, in her opinion. And things go a little south there, but, you know, it's definitely from a loving place that she's coming from.
Well, let's take a quick break. We're visiting with members of the Playmakers Company and their two productions, current productions, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Moore, and the laughter in the background is from Lisa Birnbaum from Chapel Hill. And she's here as a part of a joint Playmakers production, and she's going to be playing Shakespeare as Queen of the Fairies and other roles in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And along with her is the star of another production going on concurrently, and that's Lisa Brescia, who's playing the witch in Into the Woods. And Joe Hodge, you brought two interesting women, one back to Chapel Hill, or both back to Chapel Hill now. Can we get them to tell a little bit about their careers and maybe start with Lisa to find out how growing up in Chapel Hill led to a career in drama?
Yeah, so Lisa Birnbaum is not a member of Playmakers Company, but she sort of ought to be because she's actually from Chapel Hill. Why don't you tell us a little, Lisa?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Chapel Hill, not too far from where we are sitting, literally.
Near Weaver Dairy Road?
We used to walk to the Chelsea Theater as a family to go to have dinner and a movie.
So this is...
You know, this is my home turf, and it's absolutely amazing to be back. It's funny, actually. I didn't act at all until I got to college, at all. But I was absolutely a dancer. I went through the entire program at the Chapel Hill Ballet School, and I was a ham, big time. I'm pretty sure that I wasn't terrific, but I was always sort of put in the front row because I was such a ham. You know, I smiled big. I loved being on stage. I loved being in the lights.
But no drama. All this dancing.
I took one theater class, I think, my senior year.
Where were you in school?
Of high school. I went to East Chapel Hill High. I actually went to Chapel Hill for 1 year before they built East. But when I went to East, there was no theater. There was no real massive curriculum other than just taking an acting class. And I thought that I would follow in my mother's footsteps and be a scientist of some kind. Everyone in my family is an academic, so that seemed like my trajectory. However, what I did do in high school, I was big time choir geek. Big time.
Choir geek?
Yeah. I loved singing. Still do. Still love singing. Ended up, by the time I got to college...
And where'd you go to college?
I went to Tufts University, and I was in an a cappella group, because that's what you do when you go to a big liberal arts school and you're a singer. And I ended up auditioning for...
I just, an a cappella group, like here at Carolina, we've got the... The Clefhangers.
Oh, gosh. In high school, they would come and they would sing to us, and we would all just swoon because we thought they were so handsome and extraordinary, which probably sparked my idea, you know, that I wanted to be in an a cappella group when I got to college. In fact, I made East Chapel Hill Choir sing Sweet Dreams a cappella. Like, I made all the girls get together and do it. Yeah, I was that girl. But it was so fun. And actually, the choir teacher there is the first person who ever forced me, really, to do a really big solo, a big musical theater solo, and I was petrified.
What was it?
Oh, my God, it's so... I was your daddy's son from Ragtime.
Okay, white girl.
Yep, I was a...
You want to give us a little bit? Want to give us a little bit of it?
Absolutely. No way. No, I can't. I can't.
Audra.
I mean, can you imagine? And I was terrified. And, in fact, that day in my English class, I remember sitting there, and I was chugging, you know, water with lemon, because as singers do, to be... make sure that there's nothing on their vocal cords. And I'm weeping. And there was a guy reading his creative story, and he thought that I was just so moved by his creative story, when in fact I was just petrified.
He's probably listening, and he doesn't even, didn't to this day, he didn't know that you hadn't gone crazy over his story.
Silly. But anyway, so I performed this song, and I got through it. And it was so thrilling. And I think that perhaps was the first moment that my mother took a seat and said, oh, crap, here we go.
She's gone to the... wants to be on the stage.
This is where she's supposed to be, especially after seeing me, you know, in ballet for so many years.
Well, how did you move in college? How did you...
makes sense to me.
How did you move from singing onto the stage?
That's where I'm getting. So I auditioned for a musical.
In college, yeah, a college production.
Crazy show called Into the Woods.
Oh no!
Yeah.
So this is your this was your first, and now your current production.
Yeah. Well, not my production. Yeah, it was the first. It was my foray into theater, and I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I got confused. You're doing Shakespeare.
I'm doing Shakespeare here.
But your first, but you know what's going on the other in the other production because you've done it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a million years ago. Not to age myself. No one needs to know. But yeah, it was the first real big production, I guess, that I had ever really been in. I was hooked. Just hooked right away. There's a more romantic version. It's long. I don't know how much time we got.
We got all the time you need.
I did a theater program through Duke University in London.
So you took off from Tufts to go to London, or did this come after
no,
your
it was
after
over
you graduated?
The summer.
Over
the,
okay.
We went to 26 plays in 6 weeks, and there was a mock audition workshop, and the guy. Running the whole thing kind of begged us to participate because most people couldn't sing. And so I, of course, decide to sing I Dreamed a Dream for the musical director of Les Mis. Brilliant. It was the only song at the time that I really knew other than Your Daddy's Son, which I had deemed inappropriate as I am indeed white. So, but I sang. I remember going, we had 30 minutes practice session, and I went into this West End theater, and I walked by Eponine's costume and Fantine's nightgown, and I swear I felt a wind, and it just, like magic, everything fell into place. And I finished singing for this man, and I think I must have sang bigger and better than I've ever sang in my life. And he looked up at me, and he looked at me and he pointed and he said, well, all right then, you stick with this, okay? You know, he just... And I ran out and I walked into one of those silly red phone booths and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I'm an actor. And without hesitation, she said, oh, yeah, of course, I know. Anyway, so your grandmother is, you know, without... So I think that I was supposed to be on this path for a long time. And that's when at Tufts... Anyway, so I went back to Tufts. I auditioned for the musical. I get into the musical. Everything changes. I change my major. End up applying to graduate school. I got into the Yale School of Drama. I went to the Yale School of Drama. I graduated. I went to New York. And I've been a crazy New York actress ever since.
Well, this is great. I love this. But tell us about... we hear all kinds of stories about how hard it is for a prospective actor, actress to make it in New York. And that, you know... tough jobs, you know, callbacks. It's just, did you have a rough time, or did you just
absolutely. And it's hard to imagine in a rational sense, I suppose, choosing this for your life, because it is, it's 10 times harder than you would even think it is. You know, you're constantly hearing no, and you're constantly putting yourself out there. You're asked to be honest and vulnerable and truthful and to step into all of these stories with gusto. And then you're constantly told,
you're not the right person this time.
You're not the right person. You're too tall. You're, you know, you have the wrong hair color, whatever. But that's the job. And that's the life. And that's what you have to step into every day, wake up and say, and start over. Except, I don't know, I think that the same human struggles that we go through as actors, they're the same struggles that everybody goes through on a daily basis with their jobs. We just have less security and trust the process of life.
What was your first big...
I don't know, it's really hard.
What was the first exciting role that you did receive that gave you encouragement to keep knocking on doors?
When I graduated, the first thing, oddly enough, so I went to grad school because a professor told me I would never be an ingenue and I would never do Shakespeare.
But you, well, if you joined us late, yeah, Lisa yeah. Birnbaum from Chapel Hill is doing Shakespeare with the Playmakers as we speak.
So my first role that I got was Bianca in Taming of the Shrew at the Shakespeare Theater of D.C., who, if you know the play, is kind of the intrepid wonder of ingenues. She's
so you like that you fit. Did you feel like you fit in?
It was fun. It was great, and it, you know, I was treated incredibly well, and it was incredible. It was an awesome job for like 4 months doing Shakespeare. And what's amazing with Shakespeare is you learn something every single time you do it. You could be doing the same role for 2 months, and on the last day, you'll hear yourself say something in a different way. And suddenly you realize that something new about it. You know, it's an intellectual study, Shakespeare.
Well,
so
well,
really I just anyway.
I want to talk to you the whole time, but time's all running out on the break. But the one question some of us here in Chapel Hill might have is that our accents of the young people in Chapel Hill have seemed to neutralize out of the southern, out of our wonderful southern accents. Mm-hmm. Did you have to adjust?
Absolutely.
What did you have to do to...
For instance, in the South, you say again, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the way you say it?
Or, again? No, you say again.
Oh, my golly. I got
versus,
to work on this.
You know, I got to pick up... If you're going to write, you have to use a pen or a pen.
So you...
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No.
So I spent a lot of time, actually, with my voice and speech... So teachers, making sure that I knew the difference between my dialect and how to code shift in and out of it. That's what it's called.
And when you now that you're back in Chapel Hill and I know you're working 18 hours a day getting ready for the play, but you are encountering some of your friends and your family, and you slip back into it?
I do.
Can you give us a little example of how you talk when you're talking to your buddies?
When I'm talking to you? When I'm talking to my friends? I don't know. I mean, my parents are from New York and New Jersey, so I was kind of raised...
Sort of half and half, yeah.
Half and half, but I don't know. You go through the school system and I was a brownie, and I was... I don't know. I've always been very aware of the way that my voice sounds. I have a good ear. I love dialects. So the southern one... If I have a couple glasses of wine, I think my voice relaxes into the South real soon. But I will never stop saying y'all. That is a great word.
Well, that's the right word, yeah.
There you go.
Don't give that up.
You know?
Lisa Birnbaum, who grew up here in Chapel Hill, is one of the stars of the current Shakespeare production, A Midsummer Night's Dream, being done by Joe... being overseen by Joe Hodge, who is also directing Into the Woods. And we're going to take a break, and then we're going to visit with the star of Into the Woods.
Great.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you should have joined us late, we're talking about the Playmakers current rotating. How do you, Joe Hodge, you're here. How do I say, what's the rotating?
Rotating Rep.
Rotating Rep Productions. And we've been talking to Chapel Hill, to Lisa Birnbaum, who grew up in Chapel Hill, about her dramatic history. Can you get your other star, the one that you're directing?
Yeah. The fabulous Lisa Brescia. Lisa is playing the witch in
Those who reminded us late, you had her here before.
Yeah, Lisa joined us for Cabaret last season. Last season? Season before last? I'm lost.
Spring 2013.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. it all blends. It gave such a brilliant, brilliant performance.
They were just, when I think about that production, I see all of these people just running across the stage with luggage and with all the stuff. I mean, it never stopped. I thought that they should have gotten a track award or something for running around. I mean, it was a wonderful, vibrant production.
Thank you.
But what did you see in her performance that made you think she was right to be an old witch?
And, nothing, actually. Except that Lisa's a stunning actor. And, if you're a director, you put the biggest actors you can around you to make the work that you need to make. And you put the best actors you know in the center of productions where they're required to have the skill, the discipline, the craft, and the horsepower to pull a 2.5-hour musical like Into the Woods.
So, this is interesting. Excuse me, I want to get to Lisa real quickly, but it interests me from the standpoint of the actor who is thinking, I've got to be just right for this role. I mean, that's got to be one of your considerations, but maybe an even more important consideration is this the person I can trust to take, that I know can do anything I ask of her, him or her.
The witch in Into the Woods, as Lisa touched on early, I mean, there's it's sort of two characters. There's the old crone portion of the play, and then there's a magical event that happens halfway through the journey where she becomes her younger, beautiful self. And so having an actor with the transformational skills to be able to handle both parts of that journey, it's no small charge. I mean, that's a very, very big ride, and you need a big actor for it.
Yeah. Well, let's find out how she got to be such a big actor. And starting out, you told us earlier that you grew up in Milwaukee.
I did. I was born in South Dakota, and at the age of five, when I was five, we moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I stayed there until I was 18, and then I had to get out of Dodge. I just couldn't stay in Wisconsin.
Well, were you interested in the theater when you were growing up?
I was. As listening to Lisa Birnbaum talk about this wonderful comfort on stage and looking for the stage, I was the extreme opposite of that. I was unbearably shy and inhibited. And as I have aged and gotten experience and pushed myself out of that box, I have become less inhibited and plenty less shy. But I'm still at my core I have to kind of barrel through that. And experience, great training, and an opportunity, and the willingness, to work hard through that has allowed me to find myself in this current position that I'm in now, along with the generosity of Joe. So, I moved to New York at 18.
Well, now, we'll talk about growing up and what appeal the stage had to. Yeah.
Well, I did some musicals.
Like in the.
I was terrible. I mean, I could barely speak. I was so shy, and I've always been a singer. My dad was a big music.
What did your dad? What about your family? What about your dad? Your mom?
It was nuts. My dad was like a real biker dude, and he had these huge parties. And we had a very large backyard in this non-attached garage, which was more like an old house that had really worn down. And it was the party house. And then we had the main house, which was,
So your daddy had parties, but he would let you go to him. I mean,
my father was in no state to be overseeing children. I mean, the backyard looked like ZZ Top had moved in. It was just It was insanity. And my mother was like this farm girl from South Dakota who was trying to keep everything together. And was like a genuinely good-hearted woman. And she just was watching this chaos, trying to, you know, hold it together.
Brothers and sisters?
An older sister. Uh-huh. Who, as soon as she could escape, she was out. Like, at 14, you know, she was over at friend's house most of the time. And she had parties of her own, believe me, in that house. But so to this day, I don't really love parties because they're both titillating and extremely anxiety-producing. I don't like large gatherings. I'd much rather have a small setting like this, the four
of us. Well, and, but out of that, when there was an opportunity to get on the stage, even though you don't give yourself credit, you liked or you were drawn to that?
Well, why? I think every child needs something that they're good at, some positive reinforcement from somewhere. And I got it through singing. And in order to have people hear me sing, I had to be in front of people and sing in front of people. So I was part of choir, Girls Glee Club, sang solos, part of...
Well, it's interesting because that the other Lisa Birnbaum told us that it was getting on the stage and singing that got her... into the theater part
of
it.
Yes, and me too. If I could just sing a pretty song on stage, that would have been much more comfortable for me. Actually playing roles and telling stories and sing out Louise, you know, that was uncomfortable.
How did you fall into that? And did you fall into that while you were in Milwaukee?
Yeah, just high school musicals, you know. And as bad as I was probably one of the people who were up to it, to singing it. So
part of this goes back to what I was trying to get Joe to talk about in terms of, you're underrating your talent, and of course, but that there is a part of it that maybe some of the people might have been had better talent than you did, but they weren't willing to do the work that is a part of.
I think all of the shyness and inhibition that I felt was keeping me boxed in, there is a fighting spirit in all of us. And I think there's a part of me that wants to express myself passionately and ferociously. And because I don't always feel comfortable doing that in my own life, and as Lisa walking around, I don't walk in a room and command, you know, everyone know. You know, there are those big personalities versus big actors.
You're talking about the other Lisa, right?
I wasn't necessarily, but she's a big personality, and I love that. You know, and thank God for that, because then the rest of us more phlegmatic people can stand back and sort of, you know.
What are you talking about? I have grown up. You said you used to be inhibited. Oh, no.
Well, see, that's what happens.
I'm inhibited now.
Some kids get to New York, and they're like, I'm going to take this town by storm, and they're, you know, right out of college or whatever. And then you just sort of see them get smaller and smaller and smaller and more fearful as they kind of get pummeled. And for me, it has been the opposite. I started out, I didn't even speak for the first 6 months I was in New York, unless spoken to. If I needed to buy subway tokens, I spoke. But I was so afraid.
Well, let's talk about it. I'm so curious. That this young woman from Milwaukee departs, gets out of town and out of the party life, and so she goes to New York. What were you thinking about when you moved to New York?
Really,
what did you want to do?
I didn't know.
But did you have an idea that you wanted to be on the stage, that you wanted to be an actor?
You know, it's funny. Lisa talked about Les Mis and seeing, you know, singing I Dreamed a Dream. And when I was 17, I went to New York City and for a weekend with my then high school sweetheart, who wasn't all that sweet, by the way, but he still was my high school sweetheart. So anyway, we went and we spent the weekend, and we got scalp tickets for Les Mis, and they were like six row center. And I saw Randy Graff sing I Dreamed a Dream. She was the original Broadway Fantine. And what I saw that day changed my life. Because she was a heartbreaking actress. Yes, the voice is one in a million. Nobody sounds like her. There's just nobody better. But her acting was so impeccable. I mean, the stage was full of beautiful voices, but I didn't care. I cared about what she was doing. And I said, that's what I want to do. And so I met her in my mid-20s when I was still painfully shy. And I just went all fangirl on her. And she was so lovely to me. Fast forward all these years later, she's now one of my closest friends.
Oh, come on.
Lives in the same building in New Jersey. She's three flights up from where we are in this, you know, 30-story high rise. And I'll call her and I'll say, hey, Ethel, it's Lucy. What are you doing? You know, and we'll just get together and sit on the terrace and and complain about the business or whatever. You know, we'll have a great time.
Will you introduce me to her?
I will introduce you. You have to behave yourself. But yes,
yeah,
I will.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and Joe too. Yeah, we're coming to visit you.
Really, a truly special human being, and she was my inspiration.
Well, so she inspired you to go to New York, but without a real plan. And how did that work? How did you get your first job?
Well, I got a full-time job working in an office to pay the bills to survive. I put myself through an acting conservatory so that I could get some good foundational training and have some structure in my life. And then, oddly enough, I was 23 years old, and I saw an ad in Backstage Newspaper, which is the trade paper for actors, and it was for an international touring pop folk rock group. And it didn't say what the group was. I went on this audition, and it was the Mamas and the Papas from the 60s. John Phillips was sitting there, and I sang three songs, got a call back, went back, sang another two songs, and I was at my my office job, and I get a phone call, and then, you know, he asked for me, and I was like, who's calling? You know, and he was like, it's John Phillips. He said, get your passport. You're going to Germany in 2 weeks. And 2 weeks later, I was on a stage in Munich in front of 45,000 people singing with the Mamas and the Papas as one of their new mamas. And we like to joke that it was the Mamas and the Grandpapas because they were like well into their older years. But
no jokes about that.
Listen, I am now one of the grandmamas. So, you know, anyway, but that was a real learning experience. I did that for close to 5 years off and on over the course of my 20s. And
wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I wish we had time with both of these Lisas, Joe Hodge, to find out more. What an interesting pair you've recruited. Tell us, for people who've joined us late, what each of them is going to be doing as a part of your production.
So Lisa Brescia, who was just talking to us, is playing the witch in Into the Woods. Elisa Birnbaum is a Chapel Hill native and is playing Titania and Hippolyta in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Well, let's take a quick break and then come back and we'll tell you some more about both of these productions. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you joined us late, we're talking about Joe Hodge's wonderful work in bringing two productions, one Shakespeare, one Sondheim, together. And Joe, we've just got a minute or two left. What have we missed in learning about these two productions?
Well, not a thing, except that we're rounding the turn for home. We've got previews beginning November 1st. We open both shows on Saturday, November 8th, Into the Woods at 2 p.m. and A Midsummer Night's Dream at 7:30 p.m. Some folks are joining us for the whole day. And they run through December 9th in rotating rep, and I hope folks will come and visit us.
Well, this is great. Tell us a little bit more about what you plan for the rest of the season.
Yeah, the rest of the season. I've forgotten all about that. We're exhausted getting these plays.
Joe, no, again, if you join us late, Joe is not only overseeing the whole business and running the Playmakers day to day, but is also directing one of these productions.
Yeah, I'm directing Into the Woods. And we've got coming up just a lot of fantastic things. We've got a piece called Wrestling Jerusalem, which has a look at the Mideast crisis through the lens of a progressive Jewish voice, a great friend of mine, the theater director and theater artist Aaron Davidman. We have Arthur Miller's version of Henrik Ibsen's An Enemy of the People coming up. We've got Alice Childress's brilliant Trouble in Mind. And we have 4,000 Miles at the end of our season on Wednesday. So a lot of really interesting things coming up the rest of the way as well.
Have you got any tickets left? And are you got any bargains? You got any ideas for how we can persuade some people to come to one of these productions?
Yeah, playmakersrep.org. You can get all information. You can get tickets online. And of course, you can call the box office at 919-962-PLAY at any time, and we'll take good care of you.
Got anything planned for the summer coming up? That's just developing, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us anything about that?
I can't tell you anything about it. It's a big surprise, but we are announcing to the Summer Youth Conservatory students of previous years this week what the Summer Youth Conservatory title will be for the summer. The Summer Youth Conservatory is where we serve 45 kids last year from 17 regional high schools. They audition to become a part of the company, and they go through a fully professional process. We give them professional directors, choreographers, designers, the shows in the Paul Green Theater, and give them an experience that might be a little bit like what the two Lisas described in the Young
Lives. All right. Well, my last words is get some productions to get these two wonderful Lisas back in town. No later than next year.
Thank you, Dee. We will. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks to the Playmakers for sharing the two Lisas with us, and we look forward to seeing them on the stage. And thanks to all y'all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, Who's Talking. I'll be back here before you know it.